Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day. Darren McFarland, Chase McKay, Mitch Light from Athlon Sports, Vanderbilt sideline reporter on the football side. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing fantastic.
Doing awesome.
That is a very large coffee beverage, Chase.
Yeah, well.
I didn't know they made them that large.
I need caffeine.
Every day.
Caffeine.
This is not a morning show. Just want to let you know. It's 10 to 2, right?
I know.
Okay. I'm just.
Gets me going.
I'm always worried about your well-being.
Well, I appreciate that.
Okay.
I went to the gym yesterday. I'm on a gym.
I saw that.
Now.
You brought the wrong clothes.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw that.
I did not. Twitter.
I pulled a Nick Kale when I was packing my gym bag yesterday morning, and I was just like grabbing, I had just done laundry and I was grabbing like everything. And I grabbed shorts, threw them in there, and then I got to the gym and I realized I grabbed my swim trunks instead of my gym shorts. So I worked out in swim trunks.
Okay.
We should probably move on.
Yeah.
But it worked.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm going to leave that one alone.
Clearly worked. You look fantastic
Thank
today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Something that didn't work was in Tallahassee. Segue. Willie Taggart. We talked about it. The AD a couple weeks ago said, if Willie Taggart got hit by a bus or a train or whatever he said.
Thrown under a bus.
Yeah. Yeah. Or that. We wouldn't even consider Urban Meyer. Well, they've got an opening. There's a lot of things out there swirling. Stoops brothers are on the list, Bob or Mark. I've also seen PJ Fleck. What else did I? Who was the other? Oh, Josh Heupel.
Heupel
is kind of the early list.
Lane Kiffin is probably interested.
Yeah. So, well, he's always interested.
Wonder who I would hire?
Yeah, that's where I'm going with this. So, what do you think? Let me ask you first. Who were you? Because we said earlier in the show we were going to ask you, what's the lay of the land in Tallahassee? Because we know why Jimbo left. I don't go on their campus. Have they been building stuff? Have they taken this more seriously?
It's a complicated job, and it's a complex situation. It's not really – it obviously has a lot of positives. They've won 3 national championships there in the state of Florida. They've had tremendous success. It is not what a lot of – I think your average college football fan might not understand. It is not a school with generational wealth. It was a teacher's college, a female teacher's college for a long time. I'm not sure exactly what time they went co-ed. But if you know college football history, they were nothing until Bobby Bowden got there in the 70s. And so they don't have, like, University of Florida, University of Georgia, University of Tennessee, some of these other huge state schools, they don't have 4 generations of alumni, that have just been pouring money.
Yeah,
pouring money. Now, they obviously have enough money to buy to cobble the $17 million or whatever for the buyout. They're not crying poor, but their facilities have never been on par with the teams they recruit against. And there's a weird power structure there, which I think they've taken some steps to simplify. But as far as the booster club and the athletic director and the reporting structure, again, you could Google it and read more about it, but it's always been sort of an issue. They were fortunate that they had Bobby Bowden in place for 20-something years or however long it was, so it was never really an issue. I know he flirted with Alabama and probably would have gone to Alabama at one point in his career. And if you watch the documentary on him on ESPN recently, it was fascinating. Basically, he's like, I'm not interviewing for the job. And they wanted to interview him. He said, no, I'll go back to Florida State. So they haven't had to make many hires. And then they bring Jimbo Fisher in as a head coach in waiting. So really, Willie Taggart's the only time since the 70s that they've had to go out and, quote-unquote, interview and seek candidates and make a match there. So
they seemed a little rusty, with that being said.
Maybe that is accurate. And then the whole Willie Taggart, Florida State's a complicated situation, and Willie Taggart's a complex situation because he had a losing record. That's one you can just say that. He had a losing record. Why would you hire? Well, then you dive a little deeper. You took over a Western Kentucky team that needed to be rebuilt. Took over a South Florida team that needed to be rebuilt. His only year at Oregon, they were coming off a losing record, and Justin Herbert, his quarterback, was hurt. I get that. I would usually subscribe, if I'm a school, to the I'm not hiring a coach with a losing record. So look at Chad Morris. All right, Arkansas. They hired him. He had a losing record at SMU. You could easily excuse that away with, well, June Jones left. It was a dumpster fire. They got better every year. You would counter, well, I want a coach who walked into bad situations and won immediately. James Franklin came into Vanderbilt. They'd won 2 games in consecutive seasons, and then they went 6-7. There's cases of coaches coming in and making a bad situation much better right away. So, that doesn't mean a guy can't get the job done. I think there were a lot of positives when they hired Willie Taggart, and there were a lot of negatives. There were a lot of red flags when they hired him. You talk to people, kind of around the program or around the ACC, and the organization on the sideline wasn't great. There just wasn't much leadership and structure, which you would expect from a first-time head coach, not a guy who'd already been a head coach at three different schools. So that's surprising. Little things like, you know, I think they had to take a timeout on special teams in three straight games, like to get a punt off. They didn't have enough people on the field. So it's like when you're already struggling, that gives your bosses, fans, ammunition. Like, how are you not more organized?
Hence the words, we had no choice.
Yes. So
he left us no choice.
So the guy I would hire, Scott Satterfield.
Really?
Yes.
He just got it to Louisville.
Yes.
It's in his first year.
Proven. Now, someone would counter, hey, Willie Taggart was only at Oregon 1 year. But Scott Satterfield did a great job at App State and then takes over a Louisville program with a lot of talent, but one of the term dumpster fire is overused in college football. That was a dumpster fire last year. Fun offenses, winning, you know, turned it around quickly. Not that they're having a great year. Well, they're having a great year considered what they did last year. I just think he's a really sound coach, really solid. And I don't know, would he leave Louisville after 1 year? My guess is, yeah, he would for Florida State. So, I mean, there's a lot of names out there. You know, you guys have been on the air. Bob Stoops is refuting everything. He's like, I was at a casino yesterday. I haven't talked to anyone.
I was just at that casino, actually, so it's a nice casino.
Chase, did you interview for the job?
Can neither confirm nor deny that.
Okay. Mark Stoops is an interesting candidate. Florida State ties. Kentucky hired him away. He falls under my don't hire a coach with a losing record. He has an overall losing record, but then you look what he's done at Kentucky. Is it three straight years with 500 or better records in the SEC? Unprecedented at Kentucky.
He's done a good job recruiting.
Recruits Ohio well, recruits Florida well. Solid coach. He's a high floor coach, which you kind of know what you're getting. Is he a high ceiling coach? We don't know. At Kentucky, you know, he had that breakthrough season last year. Not going to sustain that every year, but you think he's a very solid coach. I don't think they would hire a coordinator, but if they did, Brent Venables at Clemson seems to make a lot of sense. But do you hire your rival's coordinator? That's a little tricky. Then, you know, Mike Norvell at Memphis is a guy. Mike Leach.
Now, that's an interesting name.
Yeah, Norvell is interesting, too, for several reasons, because if Arkansas opens up, he's from Arkansas, or he went to college in Arkansas. I think he's an Arkansas native, too. Mike Leach, kind of a weird fit a little bit, you know.
Weird's a good word.
Yeah, weird guy, weird fit. To me, Mike Leach is good at the Texas Techs, the Washington States of the world. Now, he might have done a great job if Tennessee hired him. But
so mad we got robbed of that.
I don't know if he is a guy who would really want to swim in the waters of Florida State with the scrutiny. Because he not only is he kind of a strange guy, he does some weird things that politically aren't consistent with the mission of a lot of universities, put it that way. So that would be interesting. PJ Fleck. Speaking of shtick, it has a shtick in that where that plays well. Does it play well for 10 years? I don't know. It might play well for 3 or 4 years. He's done a good job at Minnesota. I don't subscribe to any James Franklin theories. No way he would leave Penn State for Florida State. Now, Penn State for USC is a different animal, but Florida State has a lot of similarities to Penn State, but a lot of the negatives. Like, Penn State has better leadership, I talked about generational fans and wealth. They've got all that where Florida State doesn't. I think Penn State's a better job right now than Florida State.
What about Heupel at UCF?
No, I don't. He inherited a great situation from Scott Frost. I mean, he's done a good job. You don't win as many games as he's done and not be a competent CEO. But to me, I'd be a little scared away by a guy who walked into a great situation and just sustained for a year and a half. I want to see something longer term.
You brought up a good point. Look, Florida State, for whatever we think, they're still willing to pay over $17 million for him to go away. That is a huge investment. And, oh, by the way, a staff, and then hires a new staff. I guess the question I have before we move on is, are they willing to just pay whatever?
I think so.
Are they just to get their guy?
I think you have to if you're Florida State and you make this move.
Because this is what I brought up earlier. They have to be real careful because we've seen what happens whenever big schools, big boy football schools, keep missing with hires.
With a pedigree.
Right. And it can go downhill in a hurry, right? You don't want to miss again. Like, this is bad, but it's quick. So you have a chance to move on from this pretty quick, right? You didn't drag this out for 3, 4, even 5 years where nobody's right. been talking about the program. It was 1.5, and they're moving on. But you need to get the next one right, because if you miss again, then you're getting in a pattern of nobody's talking about our program, and they're not relevant anymore. I mean, you know, close to home. I mean, Knoxville, we've right. seen this. So,
and that's fair. I think the general feeling is, oh, it's Florida State. So many players there, snap your fingers, get the right guy. And that's probably true. But every year that, like you said, Darren, every year that you're not good, you slip further back. And, you know, Florida and Miami are in-state schools, obviously. You know, you don't think Georgia, Auburn, and Alabama aren't – it's Clemson aren't recruiting in Florida. It's not like there's just the big three in Florida
right.
and they divvy up the best players. If Clemson wants a guy, they're going to go down and get him. Georgia wants a guy, they're going to be a major player in there. So it's not just a snap your fingers, we're Florida State, we're going to bring in a great class. You know who's very happy about this? Dan Mullen.
I bet.
Yeah. Because when Mullen and Taggart were hired, I think the general feeling was that Mullen was a better X's and O's coach. Taggart was a better recruiter. And Taggart was going to maybe out-recruit Mullen, but now that Taggart's not there, you know, I think that will bolster Florida's recruiting. What also will help Florida's recruiting is the fact that they've turned it around pretty quickly and they appear to be on the right path.
Let's touch on – you brought up Arkansas. Now, let's say this. Yet again, it's early, but it looks really, really bad. Mitch, they're playing Western Kentucky, and our signal goes into Bowling Green, okay? And I don't want to disrespect. I think Tyson Hilton's had a nice first season for them, okay?
Very much so.
They are a 2.5-point favorite at home over Western Kentucky. This is an SEC school at home against a Conference USA team, and they're 2.5-point favorite. That's how far this thing has fallen for Arkansas. And they just got destroyed by an average Mississippi State team. They're horrible.
You know what concerned me last year?
So I guess I was just going to say, we know that his system is different than the previous coach, and it's going to take time to flush out those kids to get exactly what he wants. But I guess the question is, if you're in the SEC and you've got a rabid fan base like Arkansas that wants to be swimming with everybody else in the deep end, because that's what they believe, and that you can win 9-10 games a year, whether it's realistic or not, how long are they willing to keep enduring this? They've been now awful for what? If you look at the last 3 years, Arkansas, you could make a case as one of the worst teams in the country.
They haven't won an SEC home game since November of 2016. One thing that concerned me last year is at the end of the year with a new staff, their last two games, they lost 52-6 to Mississippi State and 38-0 to Missouri. You know, I know there's injuries. It's cold. You've had a bad season. You can excuse away things. But that's not really what you want to see from the buy-in with a first-year coach. Then they bring in two grad transfers, Ben Hicks from SMU, who played for Chad Morris at SMU, and the Texas A&M transfer, Nick Starkle. And neither of them have worked out. They're getting benched. Jerry Jones' grandson is starting as a true freshman this week. So this whole season, you've failed to develop a quarterback. Like, if you've developed your quarterback, it looks like you're showing signs of progress. They have some good young receivers. They got a kid here from Murfreesboro with Trey Knox, I believe, a true freshman, talented guy. But you brought in some grad transfers for a quick fix, and that didn't work. That's one of the downsides of the grad transfer. If it doesn't work, you're screwed. You're like, okay, that guy's gone. Starkle has another year of eligibility, but it looks like they're moving on. So I don't see them making a big jump next year. I think he will be back. The athletic director, Hunter Yurecek, was hired right after him, I believe, so did not hire him. I'd be mildly surprised if he were fired, but they've got to finish the season a little bit stronger. Like you said, they have been alarmingly uncompetitive. They lose at home to Western Kentucky, then they go to LSU and they get Missouri. It could be ugly down the stretch again.
Honestly, I think if they lose to Western, it could be the same thing. An Arkansas AD that comes out and says, we had no choice, we have to. And by the way, Norvell, that's interesting. Because I do think we talked about this yesterday. I found myself glued to that game Saturday night. They're a fun team to watch. Memphis is fun.
They keep churning out skill position guys, running backs.
It was a fun game.
Yeah, they are. You know, they've had some defensive issues during his tenure there, but they have been consistently strong. They've lost. They've they had good quarterback play. Brady White's not great, but they're productive offense. So, yeah, Mike Norvell should be a big-time candidate at Arkansas if they do make a move.
And I think Luke Fickell, out of that same conference with Cincinnati, he's probably going to be mentioned for some of these jobs too.
Yes, not to get too ahead. I had someone on Twitter point out to me that if Mark Stoops got the job at Florida State, Luke Fickell would be a perfect candidate in Kentucky.
Hmm.
Does that interest you?
Which Cincinnati had to come back. They were trailing basically the whole game to East Carolina.
Yeah, that's their one hiccup this year. I mean, obviously they got blown out by Ohio State. Ohio State pounded them, but they beat UCF. They've had a really good season.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back. More with Mitch Light. Athlon Sports on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We're back. Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Darren McFarland, Mitch Light of Athlon Sports. Hanging out with us talking all things college football. So tonight is the first college football playoff ranking. We will get that mystery unveiled. For me, it's... I think it's pretty much self-explanatory. So LSU 1, Ohio State 2, Alabama 3, Clemson 4. That's kind of how I have it.
I think that will be the case. There's a rational argument for Ohio State 1, but I think the way the committee works, LSU with its better wins will be ranked ahead of Ohio State. Alabama and Clemson, to me, are both in the category. They're awesome. They're proven. But their resumes are lacking compared to the other two teams right now. Obviously, if Alabama beats LSU this week, they could vault from 3-1. And if LSU wins, they'll no matter what they're ranked today, they'll be ranked number one next week.
Now, the thing that I always look at this time of year, because it doesn't matter because there's so many more games left to be played, I like paying attention to who's 5-6, who's knocking on the door of getting into that top four. Penn State, Georgia, probably.
Well, Penn State will be 5. I think the fact that they're undefeated, they've got some decent wins. You know, Michigan at home is a pretty good win. They beat Pitt, who's, okay, they won at Iowa. They don't have great wins. They've got solid wins. To me, the interesting placement would be the one-loss teams. Will Georgia be ranked ahead of the one-loss Pac-12 teams? You know, you have Utah and Oregon, one loss each. I think Oregon will get the nod over Utah. I think Utah's a better team right now, but I think Oregon has a better resume, so I think Oregon will be ranked ahead of them. What about one loss Oklahoma at Kansas State, which is not a bad – it ends up going to be – not going to be a bad loss at the end of the season. So I think that's where it's going to be interesting. I think Georgia will end up being 6. I mean, it'll be Penn State 5, Georgia 6th. Oregon 7, then maybe Oklahoma, Utah, and then what do you do with Baylor and Minnesota, the two undefeated teams? Now Minnesota has a chance this week. They play Penn State. Minnesota has
they could change a lot of things.
Yeah, they've had a soft. Their resume is not great. Their first three games against not great opponents were one score games. They were losing at the 6-minute mark of all three games, and they won. And then they've played the bottom 4 or 5 teams in the Big Ten sense. So they will have an opportunity going forward to prove themselves. If they win this game, they will no doubt jump into the top 10. Baylor just needs to keep winning. If they win out, they'll be in the college football playoff, I think, just the way it works out. There's going to be some teams that lose. But I understand why they might not be ranked higher than 10, 11, 12 tonight.
I'm going to ask you the same question that Nick Cale asked Braden Gall this morning on Morning Drive. If LSU wins this weekend, and it's close, it's down to the last drive, and it's a...
No, Alabama will not make the college football playoff.
Do you really believe that?
If they do not win the... If they lose to LSU close and they don't win the division... Okay, nothing happens in a vacuum. I've just mentioned Oklahoma, these Pac-12 schools, but I would not want to be Alabama with one loss. Who would their wins be against? Auburn?
They've been in this predicament before.
They've better non-conference wins, and they win
the national championship.
But it doesn't. Those previous years, they've had better non-conference wins, and the landscape might be different. Like this year, there appear to be more worthy teams. Like last year, you had to kind of scratch and claw for that fourth team, and ended up being Notre Dame. I don't fault Notre Dame for getting blown out. I think a lot of teams would have gotten blown out. But I think this year, at least at this point of the season, there's more really, really good teams. So I'm just saying, I think Alabama would be in a bad spot if they lose this game and don't win the division.
But isn't the
I don't think it's Alabama. They're going to make the playoff. I don't subscribe to that.
I don't disagree with you that the body of work may not be as impressive, but as we've talked about, these are human beings.
But they rank on this year. I don't care.
You can't tell me that the pass does not factor in.
It shouldn't.
Because Alabama has not burned them once. Even when everybody thought there were certain times when, you could have left them out, they never burn them. They're in there, and they're always.
But those Alabama teams didn't give up 31 points, 28 points. You know, this defense isn't as good. It's not the same Alabama team. They are a top four team. I'm not taking shots at Alabama, but
yeah, because
you got to say their defense is. They've had injuries. They got a lot of true freshmen there. They are elite offensively. They're good, not great on defense. And if they lose this game, their best win will be over Auburn. What if Auburn goes 8-4? Their best win over an 8-4 Auburn team, and you know.
But I still. I still think you have the job of the committee is to look at it and to put the best four teams in the playoff. And even if Alabama has a loss to LSU, albeit a close one, it's a loss is a loss in this case. You can't sit there and tell me that you think, okay, Baylor or Penn State, no matter what their record is better than Alabama.
Well, those are two different teams. Penn State is close to being – Penn State's in the discussion. Baylor is a nice team. Even if they go 12-0, I mean,
Georgia.
I don't want to contradict
myself. A one-loss Georgia team and a one-loss Alabama team. If it comes down to those,
Georgia would have better wins. But a one-loss Georgia is not going to be in that predicament because they're going to be in the SEC championship game. They're either going to win the SEC championship, and they will be in the college football playoff, or they'll lose and they'll have two losses and they won't be.
So their loss would be to the number one team in the land. Okay, what impressive win does Clemson have? What have they done to be impressive?
But under this scenario, Clemson's going to be undefeated.
They beat no one that's ever been ranked. I mean, will they have
so
beat
you,
a ranked
you honestly? Well, you talk about not letting the committee down. When's Clemson let the committee down? They've been better than Alabama in recent years. Under that theory, there's no way
I understand.
That you would take a one-loss Alabama over
But I'm
Clemson.
Just saying, the body of work, your one hiccup is against the number one team in the land. And Clemson, are they going to play a ranked team this season? I guess are you counting Wake Forest?
Well, Wake Forest will be ranked. I mean, who's to say Wake Forest
Texas
is that much
A&M
better than
was
Auburn?
Ranked when they played them,
right? I'm just. Who's this? I mean, do I think Auburn's better than Wake Forest? Yes, I do. But who's to say that we know that? I mean, Wake Forest has had a good season. I don't think the ACC is very good. I'm not sitting here trying to, say Clemson's got a difficult schedule. There's under no scenario will a one loss Alabama that doesn't win its division go over an undefeated Clemson. There's just no chance.
That's interesting. So on that, along those lines, and we've talked about this before with you, of when you get into the whole should they expand conversation, this is one of those years that's going to help that move that process along.
Yeah, if there are really good teams and deserving teams that don't make it, and the discussion grows about teams getting left out, that's what creates change.
Right.
It was for years and years, fans complaining about the BCS, only two teams, and then they would say, we're never changing, and then there's a press release one day that says, we're changing. I think last year there were some good teams that didn't make it. Now, Oklahoma losing to me, if you really want to create change, I would love to see Oklahoma go undefeated. I would like to see more.
Yeah, that definitely changed things.
Yeah, more really good teams, and then you get a team
Georgia
like,
losing
yeah,
South
you get,
Carolina.
Yeah, you get a team
change.
Like Oklahoma who's 13-0, wins the league, and they get left out. Then you get a lot of people. To me, when you lose a game, you lose not the right to complain, but you lose some of the right to complain. Like, the Alabama argument, well, don't lose a game. And then you've got if you don't lose a game, then you're not going to get left out pretty much any major conference.
What if the perfect storm happens? What if – let's play this game.
Here we go.
What if – doesn't matter, Alabama, LSU, it doesn't matter. The winner is going to the SEC.
Well, there's a difference because LSU has a better – LSU played Florida. LSU will have a better – that's the whole – if LSU doesn't win its division – under your scenario, I think you want Alabama to win, and then LSU is the number two team in the division because they have a better resume than Alabama would.
Okay, and then – Georgia wins the SEC championship game. They run the table, win the SEC championship game, and all three of those teams have one loss. Then what?
under that scenario, I think it's only really, really complicated if Alabama beats LSU this week. Because, again, if LSU beats Alabama, then there's a scenario where Alabama –
because you're basing that on what their rankings are going to be going into this game.
Well, not really. Just it's at the end of the year, what it looks like. Like I said before, because if Alabama loses this game, then I don't think they have any really sound argument against some of the other elite teams. I think if LSU loses this game, they have a better argument than Alabama does. So under Darren's scenario, you want.
So let's okay, say Alabama wins.
Does Ohio State win out? Their spot. Clemson, that's two spots right there. What happens in the Pac-12? There's no way three SEC teams. There are scenarios. There are doomsday, whatever you want to say, scenarios
Clemson
in which
trips up.
But how do
loses.
You pick the two? Let's just say it's two. How do you pick them?
Does Alabama go because they beat them? And I would think Alabama because they beat LSU. But I think LSU would be left out.
Then I was going to say, but then you said LSU is the one with the better resume, and then in that case you're taking the team that won the championship game.
But LSU and Alabama. But they'd have the better resume in the same situations losing that game. They both can't lose this game this week.
Georgia has the worst loss by far, right?
Yes.
So – it is interesting. I don't know what they would do, but
I think LSU would be ahead of Alabama. I mean, I think Alabama would be ahead of LSU in the food chain because they win the division and they beat them head-to-head.
I'll make this argument. If the rankings come out tonight, LSU's one and Alabama's three, and Alabama wins that game, I still have LSU in the top four when they come out next week.
Probably. So you would have, in that scenario, I think...
And I could almost you could argue that Alabama should be fourth or fifth, even if they lose.
You could have a one loss. I would probably have a one loss LSU team if it's a close game ahead of a undefeated Penn State team.
Because you're putting the best teams in. That's how
they have better wins too in their losses to a top four team. When Penn State, I want to see how they play at Minnesota. It's this is all fun and it's confusing. Every week that goes by,
steam coming off your head right now.
Every week that goes by, there's less scenarios and there's more. There's more realistic scenarios because there's not as many variables.
We've done our job. We got steam off Mitch Light's head, and looks like Willie D is in the building.
Here.
All right,
he's back from Detroit. So we'll bring Willie Donick into the mix as well. More with Mitch Light from Athlon Sports on the other side. Darren Donick. And Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Mitch Light, Athlon Sports in studio. Willie Donick back from Detroit in Greektown. He's got his shirt on, so he didn't lose his shirt.
Got three shirts on, actually.
Yeah, he's layered.
Layered up.
I had to layer down. I had lots of layers prepared for different situations today, and I have peeled off a couple because it's nice out today. Beautiful.
Before we get out of here, this is a tease before we wrap up the third hour. There's some pretty big NFL news that we will pass along after Mitch. And before we get out of here with this, Mitch, we also want to touch on college basketball. It's got some big games tonight.
Middle Tennessee's playing right now. The old 10 o'clock, 11 a.m. start to kick off the season, beating Maryville.
Over on 94.9 game two.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm sure you guys will be breaking down the Maryville roster in the next segment, strengths, weaknesses.
Are they in the Blue Cross Bowl this year, Maryville? I mean, that's the high school.
It's the college.
A little bit different.
Can I tie in Maryville into something I don't know you guys are going to talk about?
What's that?
What former Commodore starting quarterback was from Maryville?
I know the answer.
And it ties into who the Commodores are playing this week in a similar game plan, if there's any chance.
Yes.
I think Willie knows where I'm going with this.
Absolutely.
Patton Robinette.
Robinette was a Maryville.
When Vanderbilt won at Florida, it was the week after Austin Carter Samuels tore his ACL against Georgia. They go down to Florida. Now, they played a bad Florida team with Tyler Murphy at quarterback. Just an awful
–
Tyler Murphy at starting quarterback.
Who?
And
They
had – Vanderbilt's game plan was run, 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 maybe third down, throw the ball a few times. Like, Pat Robinette made, like, two or three big third down plays in that game. Other than that, they just ran the ball. And, Willie, I know you're late to the party here. Derek Mason's having his press conference, and he said it does not look like Riley Neal or Mo Hassan can play, both in concussion protocol. So Keyshawn Vaughn might get 47 carries if they have 47 offensive plays. He's going to get the ball a lot.
That is something they did back in the day and did well with Wesley Tate and Zach Stacy. Ran the Wildcat effectively.
Jerron Seymour, too, had a big game. I recently saw some highlights from that game. Jerron Seymour had a big game. Former running back there too, so
they're going to have to get creative. That's for sure.
Yeah,
and this Florida team's
a little bit better on offense and defense.
But he did not say Wallace is the absolute starter.
He said Wallace and Alan Walters.
Right.
I mean, they were really disappointed. And Wallace, if you saw the game,
it was just hopeless.
He's not bringing much to the table right now. And Alan Walters is a redshirt freshman who was pretty highly recruited, has not really done much to impress the staff in his 2 years on campus. He'll get an opportunity this week. I'd be surprised if he doesn't play.
How are they having such bad struggles on offense? It was painful to watch.
Willie tweeted something out over the weekend. A rather astute observation, Willie. No, it was basically like here's the Kyle Shermer appreciation thread. Sometimes you don't really appreciate what you have. The quarterback play has been not good at all. You know, you can say Mohassan played well in the first half against Missouri, and other than that, they have not got good quarterback play in really any game this year. And they have some talent. Obviously, Keyshawn Vaughn's an elite running back. The other two offensive weapons, for various reasons, have not had big years. The offensive line it's been adequate in recent weeks, but hasn't been great. What can make your offense good with all that? A really good quarterback. And Vanderbilt had a really good quarterback last year, and they put up good numbers offensively. They're getting poor quarterback play this year, and it's a recipe for disaster almost offensively.
It was a simple tweet, but it was just a thought I had as that second half unfolded. Vanderbilt is down by 7 for most of the second half. It was a shame that Riley Neal went out because he actually looked like he might have a chance.
Right. I'm sure he got a lot of confidence from that drive.
Yeah, nice drive. They score. He gets a concussion. And then here's Deuce Wallace, who supposedly was right in the race all summer long to be the quarterback. And, I mean, it was pitiful. They couldn't do anything. And I just thought the drop-off that we have seen, I think it was, if you go back, Kyle Shermer has been a critical, maybe the most critical thing in Derek Mason's tenure at Vanderbilt, because they were lost at quarterback before they inserted Shermer as a true freshman. What, about two-thirds of the way through his true freshman year? They wanted to redshirt him, but they were desperate. And he gave them something to hang on to. Then he really developed into a first-rate SEC quarterback, and I just did not think it would drop off this much. But
right, I was guilty as anyone, probably talking to you guys in the summer. You know, the thing that I kind of held out hope was that even though they were losing a lot in the passing game, I thought that Neal and Wallace would bring something in the running game. That neither have done that either. You know, Wallace was supposedly a dual threat coming out of Sevierville and doesn't look like he's mobile. And Neal, you know, can run a little bit, but he's definitely not a running quarterback.
Some of that could be protection, but
yeah, but it's just but they don't really do much design running plays or keep on play action stuff like that. So. Yeah, it's not defending the offensive staff, but it's just you're hamstrung when you're getting such poor quarterback play.
I also don't see much creativity in how they're trying to go about it. It's tough when you're shuttling different quarterbacks in there, but it continues to baffle me how they cannot get they cannot get Jared Pinkney involved.
Yeah, I agree. They threw to him once in the first half, and Riley Neal kind of threw it at his knees. I think he was basically just throwing it away. And yeah, it's been a big mystery.
25-point underdog to Florida,
which I'm checking with Derek Mason basically announcing that he doesn't think his top two quarterbacks are playing. I'm checking the line.
How much it's gone up?
It was 26 this morning. I mean, it won't go up in 5 minutes, but check tomorrow. I bet
it's going to be close to 4 touchdowns.
I bet it goes 28 and a half or something like that. Mm.
Tennessee, big win over UAB. Schedule is favorable, as we know, the rest of the way.
I mean, it's lining up.
Who would have ever thought after losing to Georgia State and BYU, they could finish with 7 wins? I mean,
that's the impressive thing. Like, if you would have said before the season, they go 7-5, you say, okay, I get it. You know, you can find 7 wins on that schedule. But when you lose to Georgia State and BYU, Georgia State, the absolute gimme, and BYU, the almost gimme, I think anybody who had them winning 7 or 8 games, we're counting those two. So they've been good at home. Last few weeks, they've sort of taken care of business. They weren't dominant offensively. I didn't see the game. It was the same time as the Vanderbilt game, but I looked at the box score. You know, they didn't roll up 400 yards or average 8 yards per play or anything like that, but they, against a solid team, and the thing about UAB, like, those dudes expect to win. UAB, they've won big games, and, you know, they're used to winning. They were going to Knoxville thinking they were going to win that game, especially they saw what, you know, Georgia State did and BYU. So I was really impressed, just sort of like the way they took care of South Carolina in the second half. And then they've had their quarterback issues too. They've had their revolving door at quarterback, but they've powered through and been a consistent offensive team of late.
I think their next two games are really intriguing. They have dominated Kentucky over the years. They're 31-2 in their last 33 meetings against them. It's in Lexington. That line is basically a pick 'em.
Got like Tennessee.
Then Missouri, Okay, two road games. And what is Missouri now? I mean, I think those are two really, really interesting games, the next two games.
I'm interested to see what that Missouri game is, too, because Missouri's been so good at home and so bad on the road. Like, they will assume they lose to Georgia this week. That'll be three straight losses on the road, but they're coming back to Columbia where they're undefeated. So, and if Tennessee has, I don't know how to say, like, any pride or whatever, you know, Missouri's embarrassed them in recent years. And you don't go to Tennessee to lose to Missouri like that. You know, they've run them off the field a couple times. So I think that's a big game. They're all big games at this point, but I think that's a big game for Tennessee to take a next step.
How do you see this one playing out in Lexington?
I like Tennessee. I think I haven't checked yet this week. Is Sawyer Smith expected to play for Kentucky? I haven't done my game research on that, but they're limited offensively.
Quite honestly, I don't know if that would change anything.
Yeah, Lynn Bowden, they might have better success there. I like Tennessee, just like the way they're playing now. They played well at Alabama, but their wins have come at home. You know, Chattanooga, Mississippi State, South Alabama, UAB. Can they do it on the road?
Yeah, they haven't had a road win yet.
Right.
So
they played bad. They've only had two road games. They played poorly at Florida. They played pretty well at Alabama. They get Kentucky and Missouri. So we'll see, but definitely some opportunities there. I'm looking at their schedule. The most amazing thing about Tennessee's schedule this year, they've actually played two games in under 3 hours. Which does not
really?
Have, which is, if you go to CFBstats.com, it's the site I use for almost everything. They have the game time of every game. So, yeah, they've had two games in under 3 hours.
That's a victory.
For everyone. That's a victory for mankind. It's one small step for football.
Man, they need to work on that more, trying to find a way to get the game.
As a former sideline reporter, you'll appreciate this. There's nothing better than being on the field when it's like 40 degrees and windy. It's a 21-point game with 2.5 minutes to go, and you see the referee said, official timeout. Like, come on, everybody. It's 11
Pick
o'clock.
It up. Yeah.
Run the clock.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Madison Square Garden tonight. Two big tilts. Doubleheader. Kansas, Duke in the first game, and then Kentucky and Michigan State in the nightcap. Look, college basketball fan, I'll check it out for sure tonight. I think I love that college basketball is doing this in early November. It'll get my attention. If it was Kentucky against Transylvania and Michigan State versus, you know, some Michigan community college, nobody would pay attention, but this matchup, I think they'll get a lot of viewers tonight.
Yeah, it's been a big topic in recent years. How does college basketball make a splash in the midst of this college football, you know, obsession, or in NFL, everyone? This is a good way to do it. You know, the last couple of years they've had this Champions Classic where they've gotten the top four teams. I think it's these same four teams 2 years in a row. So it's good for the sport. I think most teams are, it's like the official start date. You know, Vanderbilt doesn't play until tomorrow. I don't know if Tennessee plays tonight or tomorrow. But, yeah, it's good. And, you know, the great thing about college basketball that's so different than football, we talked off the air, Kentucky, like last year, got blown out against Duke. They could lose by 20 tonight. Sure, people will freak out, but it really doesn't matter at all. You've got a 30-something game schedule. College football, you lose that first game, it's like the season's over. That's it's just different mindsets between the two sports.
I'm going to predict Kansas beats Duke tonight.
Okay.
You heard it first.
I don't think that. I mean, it's not like you're.
I don't know what the. I have no clue who's favored. I think
it's not that bold. My point is, it's not that bold of a pick.
No, it's like four top five teams.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And probably Michigan State. Well, I would say Michigan State and Kansas are your two winners tonight. That's what I'm going with.
I could be on board with that.
Mitch, good to see you as always. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy the swamp.
I always do. 11 a.m. start. Love
it. That's right. Mitch Light, Athlon Sports and Vanderbilt sideline reporter. Hey, Alabama and LSU in Tuscaloosa. That is the college football game of the week for sure. It is the CBS afternoon game. And if you think you're a big Alabama fan, we're going to give you a chance to win a cabin on the Crimson Tide Cruise February 10th through the 15th. It's the second annual Crimson Tide Cruise, and it'll set sail from New Orleans to Cozumel on to Mexico on board the Carnival Valor. It's a national champion-worthy vacation with your favorite Alabama sports legends on board. Send us a picture through Twitter. Use the hashtag BamaCruise, hashtag BamaCruise, or you can upload a picture at thegamenashville.com. Book your cruise at CrimsonTideCruise.com and get $150 off with the promo code GAME. There's some NFL news out there. Back to wrap up the third hour next. Derek Mason at 1 o'clock, so we'll head over to West End for our weekly chat with the head football coach. There's some NFL news. One of the pieces of news affects the Titans and their division. But let's start with the team they just lost to in Carolina. The Panthers have announced,
per multiple reports, and it's been confirmed by Adam Schefter of ESPN, one Cam Newton has been placed on injured reserve, ending his season.
The quote that I saw, he will likely take significant time to heal.
Wow.
When you hear the word Liz Frank, this is, I had never heard it in my life until a few years ago.
Until you met Liz.
I don't know Liz or Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Of the Liz Frank. Was it Liz married Frank and they put their names together? I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I know a lot of Franks. I know a lot of Liz. I don't know Liz Frank.
As do I.
But it's like you think, okay, a broken foot, okay, you take your 6 to 8 weeks, maybe a little longer, and it'll heal. But like, there's something about that particular thing that's like, as soon as you see that word, it's serious. Like, was Javon Kearse maybe, when he originally got hurt, was that not a Liz Frank?
I think yeah. That's right. Because I know he definitely dealt with foot injury.
It took a long time for him to get right. Remember, there was the whole thing, too, about the X-ray. They wouldn't give him the X-ray, and Floyd Reese was like, I got to see the X-ray. I got to see.
Right.
And the Eagles, sight unseen, signed him for the big money. And they're like, we don't need to see your X-ray. We feel like it'll be all right.
I'm trying
and
to
he was gone.
Remember that. Yeah.
Let's see.
But I don't know if that was specifically the Liz Frank. I know it was a foot.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of little bones in there, right? And it's just a certain.
That's right.
As much as I
have a Liz Frank.
As much as I bang my big feet on things, I wonder how many bones I've broken over the years.
It's painful too, by the way.
No.
I told you guys when I was dealing with the knee stuff. Walking around, I figured, well, I'm just, you know, I'm overcompensating. I told you I had a hard time walking around on the same foot as the bad knee. And I still, to this day, I don't know. Well, my doctor said it was tendons. But it's incredibly painful. And I can only imagine. That was just tendons. You can imagine an injury like this and, oh, by the way, trying to play professional sports. How incredibly difficult that is. I mean, it's like there's two that you don't really think about until we've seen them play out. Liz Frank is one. The other one's turf toe, right? They're like, oh, it's turf toe. But we watched it change careers. We've watched it basically end careers.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just hard to come back from those
at
that
level.
It
seems like the new kind of turf is better. You don't hear as many cases of turf.
You don't hear it as much.
Though.
Yep.
I think that probably is due to the new fields. Because the old AstroTurf, that's why it was called turf toe, right? It bent your foot more. It didn't give as much. Your foot doesn't sink in there more. I think that's where the turf toe really happened. And so after a while, there's almost none of those. There are none, right? Nobody has those anymore.
The second piece of news, Nick Foles has been named the starting quarterback for the Jags.
Wow.
So Minshew mania is over. If you watched them Sunday, it was over in London.
Yeah.
They were pathetic.
It gives you a little bit of hope, but it also grows the frustration, the twists and turns of the AFC South race, where it looked like Minshew was going to give them a spark. Now they had a real clunker. You got the Texans with some injury issues, yet they still are hanging in there. And then you've got the Colts with all their issues. Wow.
The
Titans, if they had just eked out one more game, if they're sitting at 5-4 and not 4-5, the outlook is different, but it's not over.
Frank Reich said he's hopeful that Jacoby Brissett will be able to play. It was a MCL sprain.
Yeah.
So hopefully he'll be good.
It's just amazing. Like the Texans, we've talked about this. You trade away Jadeveon Clowney. J.J. Watt's lost for the season. Lamar Miller was your number one back. You lost him before the season ever began.
And Deshaun Watson gets beat up.
And here they sit, right there in the right there atop the division again.
Billy, I would love to know, you know, what Billy O's secret is. Bill O'Brien, he just has.
And it seems like every year they're not happy with him. Like you always hear, like, is this the last year of Bill O'Brien? And with the Texans, right? And they just always find a way to get in the playoffs. And it's unbelievable. It doesn't matter who goes down for. They just always find a way. I sit there watching them. Okay, here's first game without J.J. Watt. You know, we had them in pick six. We're like, ah, Jacksonville knows this trip. They know how to play in London. Went over there and just laid a big old egg. They were pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. The Texans dominated them. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And the Jags here, you know, it's like, oh, okay. They had an opportunity to go 5-4. That's a huge game for them. I know. And they just laid a big egg. And here sits right atop the division again in the driver's seat, the Texans.
It just feels like Andrew Luck retires. The entire division goes, all right, okay, we got a chance. And except the Texans were the one, oh, we got this. And then the Titans and Jags are like, dum 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 dum.
Right, and by the way, Brissett goes down early in the Pittsburgh game.
Well, yeah, when did they pulled it off?
By the way, it looked
first
bad.
Quarter.
It was first looked bad, and they still
Brian
almost
Hoyer.
Yeah, and they still almost won the game.
They had a field goal to win it.
Vanderjagt, not even close. I mean, Vinatieri. Vanderjagt
might as well have been Vanderjagt, right? The
wrong,
idiot kicker,
wrong V kicker.
Was it idiot kicker that he said?
Yeah.
I thought it was something else.
By the way.
That's a throwback right there.
Vinatieri.
Skip the generation.
I think this is right. In fact, you can Google this and look this up. Make sure I'm right. Fact check me. I think he's missed 10 field goals this year. Think about it. If his name wasn't Adam Vinatieri.
He'd be long gone.
He would be way gone. He would be, I don't know, doing.
Adam Vinatieri.
Lyft rides or Uber rides. I mean, he would not
season,
be in the league. I think he's missed 10.
Yeah, that seems.
I can look it up quick.
Well, he's missed a lot of extra points, too.
Yeah, he's. Why is this not working for me? The internet is not liking me right now. I'm sorry.
Boo.
I know.
You had one job.
Slow draw.
I know.
One
I
job.
Had one job. And I,
one job to do.
And I have failed.
Failed. All right, we'll come back. We'll head over to West End. We'll talk to Derek Mason next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.